Welcome to Bergenomics, demystifying economics with Ross McDowell.
Welcome to the Bergenomics podcast, where my experts and I demystify current topics through the paradigm of economics. I'm your host, Ross McDowell. COVID prevented literally billions of people around the globe from attending their workplace. Preventing the habitualness of travelling to their workplace caused employees to reevaluate their work-life balance. Was there a better way to conduct both their income-producing work lives and their non-work or family lives? Two significant discussions have been occurring ever since: the working from home or hybrid working discussion, and there's also the discussion about the Great Resignation. Joining me today on the Bergenomics podcast is Professor Mark Wooden of the Melbourne Institute. Professor Wooden is one of Australia's leading commentators on contemporary developments in our labour market. In 2020, Professor Wooden joined the Fair Work Commission as an expert panel member. He is also the co-principal investigator of the economic and social impact of COVID-19 mitigation policies, which is funded by the US National Institute of Health. Professor Wooden has recently conducted research into the mental health aspects of working from home. Mark, welcome to the Bergenomics podcast.
Hi, Ross.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics recently stated that there are 9.5 million Australians in full-time employment and 4.1 million in part-time employment. So that's roughly half the Australian population. The social and economic ramifications of changing the work habits of half our population is quite profound. So the first question I want to put to you is, working from home, hybrid working, is this a change that's been accelerated by COVID or created by COVID?
Well, absolutely, there's been a big change, and the COVID and the pandemic and the policies linked to that pandemic have been the driving force. If you look at various data sources, I'll refer in particular to the HILDA survey, Household Income and Labour Dynamics in Australia survey, which is something I run for the Australian government, taxpayer funded. Prior to the pandemic, and this study started in 2001, we follow the same people over time. Okay, one quarter of the Australian workforce reported working from home sometime. But most of those people are just working at nights, working on the weekend, taking work home with them. Okay, relatively few Australians were what I would call home workers in the sense that they did most of their work from their home base. Okay, and about 5 to 6% of the employed pre-pandemic were what I would call genuinely people working from home, working more than half their hours, paid hours, from their home. Okay. After the pandemic, or during the pandemic in 2020, this rises dramatically. And according to the HILDA survey, about 23% of the workforce are now doing more than 50% of their time from their home. And that lines up pretty nicely with the census too, the 2021 census. They have a question about where you're working on census day, and about 23% reported they were working from home on that day.
Do you think then the propensity to be able to work from home, so not so much at this stage talking about what your employer's preference is, but the propensity to work from home has been able to happen because over the last several decades we've exported a lot of our manufacturing jobs to China, and therefore the sort of jobs that are remaining within our country are easier to work from home?
Well, that's sort of true. I mean, can only really be sort of office jobs, white collar type desk jobs that are done from home. Of course, we've got, you're right, manufacturing to precipitously decline, but there's still lots of other jobs in the service sector which you really can't do from home. You can't really wait tables from home, okay? Nurses, doctors, you know, the health system, the biggest expansion replacing manufacturing has been healthcare. Yep. Most of that is going to be done from hospitals, from clinics, from office. They're not going to be done from home. Okay, so it's office work which benefits mostly, not entirely, but it's those white collar jobs. Okay, so yeah, it's not. I don't think it's really linked to the decline in manufacturing.
Okay. Would you see any correlation between people that are able or want to work from home and education levels?
Well, yes, but only because that's correlated with white collar jobs. Okay. So the types of people who can access it are the sorts of people that have university degrees. Okay. So there is a correlation there, but it's just a function of the types of jobs that can be worked from home. I don't think it's because, you know, the types of innately high educated people want to prefer to work from home, let's say. I don't think that may exist, but I don't know of any evidence to support it.
Okay, all right. Now, let's get into the crux of this argument, which is almost the employer versus the employee, which is what people are discussing. And it takes my mind back to the worker versus the owner of capital, which has always been the story of economics. And is this really just another replay of that type of situation? The Economist magazine did some research and said that there's 50% of employees want to work from home 5 days per week. The same research said that the employers were happy for the employees to only spend one day at home. Yet, in Australia, 70% of workplaces have a formal work from home policy now, and that's double the number that existed in 2019 in terms of formalised policies. You've got people like Elon Musk. Some people love him, some people don't. He's saying you've got to spend 40 weeks. If you work for me, you've got to spend 40 weeks in my workplace. Otherwise, you know, there's the door. You've got Australia's largest commercial developers, people like Charter Hall, building office blocks or workplaces that have now got new fantastic employee amenities trying to attract people back into the workplace. So there's a whole lot of different mixes in terms of what's going on. Before we get to the specific, the employee versus the employer situation, in society, we built central business districts and they evolved for a purpose. And that was bringing all these people together. Is that still relevant?
Oh, I think it's still a bit relevant, but when they built those CBDs, didn't have the technology we have today. So they didn't have Zoom meetings, okay? And then no one thought at that time, oh, well, people can be located anywhere and we can actually eyeball them and have these meetings together. So, so the big change. The big loser here is actually CBDs, okay? That CBD life, okay? They did thrive. I mean, the big office buildings for office workers, okay? That's what they were for, okay? And it was efficient to have them. There is efficiencies in having people together because generally speaking in the workplace, workers are interdependent,
okay? Sure.
And that's what it's about. But if technology can be used to still maintain the benefits of that, harness the benefits of that interdependency, whilst people are still able to live in their own work, in their own homes, not have to commute, okay? Being able to nip out and pick up the kids from school and et cetera, do things like that, they're better off. And firms potentially win too because they're no longer paying rent on that big office space.
Let's get to that. Let's get to those very specific. They're the ones that people are having the arguments at dinner parties over. But are you saying that the development of technology can now displace the need to build cubicles on floors in high rises in CBDs?
It's facilitated that. Yeah, it's made that possible. It won't work for every workplace and won't work for every situation, but in many situations it will.
Do you think that it will diminish the number of buildings that we need to build in a CBD?
I think the CBD won't be as important going forward, and so that's a bit of a worry for Lord Mayor Sally Capp and other Lord Mayors around Australia.
But also for infrastructure, I mean, you know, you have these train lines all meeting in the CBD. Yeah. There's a whole society has developed.
Well, that's why Mr. Dan Andrews say we need his loop. We need train lines not all going into the hub and spoke approach.
Okay, so that's
it's big changes. This has ramifications, but we still got to remember, we're still talking a minority of the workforce. How many Australian workers can actually work from home?
Yeah, but okay. you're saying that working from home is the office job.
CBD, exactly right. So CBDs is the big loser here.
And if you look at, for example, we're in Melbourne at the moment. Melbourne's a very nucleated city. It has grown out circular, sort of, compared to, let's say, Sydney, which is certainly confined by its geography. That doesn't become relevant as much anymore, you're saying, because you can be anywhere.
It's an office working anywhere. So they can relocate to Bendigo, relocate to Traralgon, which, of course, they're doing, which, of course, now creates problems for people living in the regions because they've just found out their rents have gone up. Okay, but I see that as a short-term problem. Surely they can build more accommodation in these regional places without too many difficulties. It's not like they're going to be, Bendigo's not going to get some huge urban fringe, unlike in Melbourne, where you can live way out on the fringe, right, and have problem accessing services. So you can live anywhere. You can go live on the Melbourne urban fringe,
sure.
Okay, or you can live in Bendigo, etc. That's the theory. I guess, can you be anywhere? Because if you can be anywhere, you don't have to be in Australia. So there's a potential problem that for Australia is that, oh, okay, all of a sudden, my paralegal work can be done in the Philippines. Mm. Now, I chose Philippines specifically because it's in our time zone. Because I still think there are time zone differences. So you'll notice you won't have as many Zoom meetings if the people are all over the world. Because people still like the sleep, you know, between certain hours, etc. So time zone, I think, is still relevant. But have a look what countries are in our time zone. I mean, all of East Asia is effectively in our time zone or close to it. Okay, so that's a big threat to Australia. So, you know, if you're using the certain jobs, which maybe are cheap and, I'd say cheap's not the right word, are relatively simple. So white collar jobs that are simple to do, not so complex, okay, they could be outsourced anywhere, not just to Australians living elsewhere in Australia, but overseas.
Okay, so there's a whole lot of different perspectives, I guess, from also an employer's point of view. Some might be very happy to outsource jobs because it's reducing their costs. I seem to remember some very large firms at the start of CBD taking great delight in getting out of huge leases, reducing their costs, in fact, even selling their buildings that they owned, and putting $70 to $100 million back into the right side of the balance sheet, assisting their accounts. But there is, from their point of view, some arguments that they want to maintain their employees at a workplace. And some of those arguments, and we're talking maybe about the office worker here as well, that they believe productivity isn't as good if their employees are working from home because, as you said, they whip out and they pick up a pint of milk or they pick up the kids or whatever, and they see that as being, a lack of control, and that leads to a reduction in productivity. Reduced workplace interaction may lead to less innovation. So I guess it's not so much the hanging around the coffee machine, but it's those things that happen organically between people. Have you thought about this? I just saw that such a person and he said this and that and maybe we could use that. So they believe that innovation isn't heightened without the people in the workplace. The cohesion of their own corporate culture dissipates because corporations need corporate culture to move forward. They'd spend a lot of money on their own branding because of that. Not having employees within sight and seeing how they operate and communicate in terms of succession planning, how do you select the people that should be taking the rising steps up the ladder unless they're in front of you? On the job training, in terms of human capital, developing the people, you can choose the people that need more development or less development. There's some of the employee arguments saying, no, come on, I want you back at work. What do you think about those?
Well, they're all relevant, aren't they? I mean, everything you said, you can't really disagree with. But it's going to be the weight you give to each of those aspects is going to vary from firm to firm. Okay, so some things are going to matter a lot. Okay, so if your overheads are very high, these operating businesses in the CBD very high, you're going to have more incentive to get out of that. As I already mentioned before, I think the interdependency of workers. Okay, so if the types of tasks people are doing, they're always sort of operating on their own in a vacuum anyway, and then you just sort of have meetings, they can probably be done more easily at home. but where workers, where innovation comes from, workers interacting, as you said, organically, where management by wandering around is so important, whereby just those conversations over the water cooler, over the coffee machine, actually, they're important. They can be important in many settings. So it's even in my own work, I find that I would say I'm definitely more productive for the organization when I'm here in the office. Okay, but for my own sort of self-interested publishing academic articles, etc., I can probably do that very effectively at home, probably more effectively at home. I have collaborators. I've got them on the phone. I can call them up. Okay, I tend to find that Zoom isn't the best thing. You do that after the event, but if you just want to make contact, I've got them favorited on my phone. Okay, have the conversation, can FaceTime them as well. Okay, so that works quite well with very small teams, one or two people. But once you've got larger teams involved, I think things do start to break down. Okay, so it comes down to how organizations are run and what their mission is. I, though, do agree with you. I think monitoring of all workers, obviously, can't be done very easily from home. And if you did, you know, it's going to be some pretty draconian technology, or counting, you know, presses of the keyboard, for example. So I do think there is the risk that worker productivity does decline. And I think one indicator of that is, have a look what days of the week are the favoured days for people working from home. Monday and Friday. What is that about? Why those 2 days? Seems to me like a hint of extending the long weekend, extending the weekend, isn't it? You know, if it didn't matter, you could choose any days. Okay, and it wouldn't be those 2 days. Okay, so but workers are choosing those 2 days. So I've got a funny feeling a lot of workers are tapping out at 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, for example. Okay, but workers being able to, you know, drop their kids off, etc., I don't think that's a problem. Okay, it just means they can organise their work time more efficiently. They might start. Remember, they don't have to commute. I mean, all that time you're not spent commuting, you can get onto your computer at 8 a.m. rather than 9. Okay, but you maybe get on at 7:30 because, you know, you might be still working in your pajamas, etc. Okay, so I don't, there, you know. It's horses for courses, and we're going to have to see how this plays out. But every firm is going to have to make their own decision. But it is true, they might find they've got a bit of resistance from their workers now. The workers have a bit of taste for it. Some workers really like it. And so, you know, I can imagine this could be part of the new enterprise agreement making. Okay, instead of focusing on how much we're paid, they'll be focused on how much time they get to spend at home. Okay, that may become a bargaining chip, and may actually lead to some workers, Australian workers, getting less wages than they would otherwise, because the enterprise agreement making would have been so focused on the working from home issue rather than their wage.
Is it easy to measure the productivity of this situation?
No, I mean, most of these sort of white collar jobs, very difficult to measure individual worker productivity. Okay, you might be able to measure the total firm's output, you know, in terms of sales, etc. Okay, and then you can divide it by the number of workers there. But you're not going to know how many hours they are. So unless they're going to bring back, you know, Bundy clocks, etc., and people clocking in and that sort of thing, and even that's can't be monitored from working from home. So you're in organisations where you're working on trust. Okay, what you're trying to do is you'll exploit this when working from home enhances commitment. It increases worker satisfaction. It reduces their likelihood of quitting in the future. If it's a positive job attribute. So maybe they'll be more motivated. But you've got to trade that off against the fact that you cannot monitor them. Okay. But there are plenty of firms now that have minimal monitoring. Okay, and create distrust. So it'll be different. There were some firms who will just say, we're never going to have an actual office ever again. And I think, you know, I think I've heard Deloitte say that we're basically abandoning all office-based work, and everyone will be working from home in total. Okay, but other firms, that will just not be the thing. And then, of course, you've got the Elon Musk of the world who just want everyone to be like him, okay, which is a workaholic and a maniac and a genius. Okay, but
what happens to people like Deloitte's then, where the edifice of the corporate brand surely is dissipated if you don't... Yeah.
I don't agree with that. I think the brand is what you make it. You're going to employ a smart team of publicists to make your brand. It may not even be the one that you identify with. So I don't think that's the issue. Okay. I think the company will have to go to some effort to maintain its brand and image in the marketplace. And sure, if the products they start producing become of a lower quality or become less useful, they'll lose out in the market. So the market will determine the outcome. Okay, if they can still operate, if they can still satisfy their clients, if they can produce what their clients are looking for, then that's fine. They'll do well. And so they'll just have a new image, which will be based, and you, yeah, clients will not be able to turn up to a place that says, this is Deloitte's office. Okay, they still may have locations where they'll run meetings from. They still may have face-to-face meetings. And so don't assume that just because you're working from home, you'll always be working from home. You still may have to work remotely on some days. You have to travel in to the CBD for some big meeting that they decide with a client using rented premises, you know, a hotel somewhere else. Why does it have to be your own special dedicated office or your own special dedicated boardroom? Yeah, that gives you more opportunities to have your signage. Okay, so you lose out on signage, but okay, we have advertising. We have many ways to advertise our products. We have the internet. Okay, so they'll just change their marketing strategy.
So employees, their perspective is that they believe they're more productive working from home because there's less interruption.
Yes, that of course could be a bad thing because it means the less interruptions are the interruptions we think are positive interactions. But anyway.
Yes,
yeah, that's right.
So that's very quality. Less travel time.
Absolutely, that's the obvious. That's the obvious one.
Less cost in travel.
Well, exactly right. You're not spending money on petrol and public transport fares.
Better work-life balance, which is such a wide discussion. Working flexibility, allowing integration of family and parenting responsibilities. Now, you've done some research into that particular area, haven't you?
Well, the biggest benefit. So travel time is the obvious one. But the bigger benefit, which is linked to travel time, is you just have more control of your working time. Okay, the when you work, you know, minutes of the day, how you allocate work across the 24 hours. Okay, much more control. Okay, whereas you go to workplace, you have to turn up and you're beholden to what's happened on that day. You have now much more control. And that feeds into things like you now can fit in all your non-work things. Okay, so if I work from home, okay, it used to be, and if I had a tradie come in to some big thing, take the day off, okay, a leave day, okay, apply for leave for that day. Now the tradie comes in, I stay home, I'm at home, I'm working, and here, open the door, fix that up, and yeah, if you've got an issue, come and see me. But you know, and I can continue on, don't have to use my leave days for that. I'm there.
But hang on, look at that. Isn't before you had to apply for a leave day?
Well, because I felt I did, because I wasn't going to turn up to work because I didn't know when the tradie was coming. Okay. He didn't give me 9 o'clock at night, etc. Maybe I don't want him in my backyard or in the house. I definitely don't want him in the house without me being there.
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't give him the keys, you know, unless they're a close personal friend. So you know, so you get all this extra flexibility, and arguably you're still working. Now the problem is, what happens if, because he's there, you start having cups of tea with him, or you start having chats with him or something, you know, because whatever. And that may detract from, that may be a distraction.
It's a productivity falls.
Yeah, but I think the biggest distractions aren't that. I think the bigger distractions are things like having the kids running around, okay? So the worst outcome for a firm would be if the worker stays home, previously was putting their kids in childcare, and now says, I can save up big on not spending on childcare because that's expensive, have the kids at home, and I'll continue to do my work.
Mm.
Now, how many people, and they're going to be women mostly, mothers, can maintain the productivity and still look after little ones, okay, at the same time? It's got to hurt, doesn't it? I know they're good at multitasking, but the productivity in the workplace got to go down, okay? So, yeah, so there's the trade-off, okay? But work-life balance is the big thing. And yes, we have done some research. We've looked at job satisfaction using HILDA survey data. And the HILDA survey data has got 21 years of data, right? So we know everything they did, and it's the same people. So we know what they were doing in 2019 pre-pandemic. And then we measure job satisfaction every year, 0 to 10 scale, how satisfied are we with the job. And then we can see how many hours they're working from home. And we can see the guys who increased their working from home, and we can see what happened to their job satisfaction, what's the change, okay? And we can do that for everybody who's a worker. Men, diddly squat, okay? No change in the job satisfaction. Positive or negative, nothing. It's just no effect on average. This is, we're dealing with averages here, so remember, some people benefit, some people lose, but on average, nothing. Women, on the other hand, positive effect. Women are more likely to say, to report their job satisfaction going up if they're working lots of hours from home. And the most importantly, it's women with children. They're the ones who report the biggest impacts, positive impacts. So they're loving it, okay? They're saying it's great for them. Men, not so much.
Okay, but
their productivity is more likely to decline.
It may be. I can't measure that.
Have a guess.
We can ask workers what they think, and as you know what they're going to say, the workers say, oh, my productivity is fine. Yeah. Okay, and the employer might like to say that productivity is going down. So it's very hard. Employers, can they measure individual productivity in these situations? Sure, if you're doing really basic paralegal work, etc., you can. Okay, and guess what's going to happen in those situations? Productivity is either not going to fall, or they're going to lose their job, or they're going to call them back into the office. So where the working from home is going to stick is where you can't measure productivity, where you can only measure it at the level of the company.
That's going to take time.
And it's going to take time. Okay. So firms have to make a decision. Okay. They've got to make a decision. The risk of productivity going down versus the benefits that job satisfaction, employee commitment, quit rate. So example, let's say you've got a really important bunch of people who are hard to replace. Very hard to replace. If they leave you, you're really in a difficult situation. Those sort of people are the sort of people you give big wage increases to. Well, now maybe you give them not just the big wage increase, but you give them the greater flexibility to work from home. And this already happens in some sectors, right? But it just wasn't that common. It already happened pre-pandemic. It just was not very common. Now it's much more widespread. So the question is it going to stick? Plenty of experts overseas say, yes, it is. I don't think it's going to stick as much as they say for some of the reasons that you're alluding to. That productivity, negative productivity effects will be there, will be more widespread than some of the more positively inclined experts think.
Are we in a little bit of a situation at the moment where, because we have internet technology allowing us to work from home, we've got some proposed legislation that discusses people's rights to work at home?
Yeah. That's a big issue.
We've got the lowest unemployment rate in 48 years, 3.4%. It's empowering the employees to say, hey, listen, I want to work from home, employer. If you don't like that, you're in trouble, mate. If we have, and I love to use this phrase, if we have a little whiff of unemployment, is that going to change?
Well, obviously reduces the bargaining power of workers, but don't forget that unemployment risks are concentrated on a certain groups. So when unemployment goes up, who's going to be most affected? Yeah, people in unskilled type jobs are not going to be working from home. Cleaners, people who wait tables in restaurants, etc. So it really comes down to what the risks are in those industries and those sectors. But sure, if there's a, I think this is an important issue. It's the extent to which firms feel they're forced to lock in, because if productivity goes down, this is a cost. Okay, this is a cost. It's the same as they've got to pay high wages to get good staff. Mm. Now maybe you have to pay them, have to allow them to work from home. That's just another cost. Now, if it's offset with lower wages, if it is, anyway, we don't know how it's going to go in the future. But if an enterprise agreement, I mean, if effectively you could have got 5%, I'll use some big number that most firms aren't giving, and they give you 3, but you also get a very generous working from home type arrangement, and then that's what we'll end up with. Now, the other thing we haven't talked about is a lot of workers aren't going to like that, because what if you have a crappy work from home setup? What if you work from home and you've got 4 kids at home and you've got 2 bedrooms or something? Okay. What if you live in a small inner city apartment, okay, with a tiny nook as your study? Okay. You probably don't want to work from home. You want to go to office. Okay, so you go to the office, you say, I'm not having any of this, as long as the firm lets you, because if the firm has a policy of everyone working from home, you've got a problem, you'll quit and you join another firm. But now you've missed out on the company-wide wage increase, because instead of getting 5%, you're getting 3, because they've given these concessions, presumably to women, married women mainly. So this is the issue. And then we'll have, presumably if this person would want to have an individual wage agreement, where he says, well, I'll forego the working from home and have it. Is that how it's going to work? I don't know. But you can see it's at interesting times. Okay.
It's a lot of grey there, isn't it?
Because not only is every firm different, but every individual is different. Okay. So working from home, while I said women on average benefit, on average. Okay, so if you live in large houses in the suburbs, or if you've moved because of this into the regions, you know, away from the capital city, and you've got a great working from home setup, great. But not everyone has that privilege. Okay? So people from lower income backgrounds probably, for example, aren't going to have those setups. People with large families may not also have a great setup either.
There is the great
story of, I think he was in Melbourne, the chap that his company was forcing him to work from home. He would get up, shower, get dressed, have breakfast, get into his car, drive 5 kilometres back to his driveway, get out of his car, get into the room next to where he had breakfast and start work, because he required that geographic separation in his mind.
Oh, in his mind, yeah.
To be able to start work.
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, that's a bit of a silly story in some sense, extreme. Okay, but I think a lot of people, he's not alone, a lot of people, if their office that they're using at home is used for other things, like at your dining room, or even if it is your office, but you also use it for entertainment, you know, on weekends, etc., and you've been using it for entertainment space, okay, I think it's quite hard to switch, okay, get that out of mindset. Now I'm working, and you'll fall back into leisure activities. And this is one of the interesting things, of course, also about the effect of technology. People complain that technology has blurred the boundaries between work and home, and work is encroaching on home. Yes, but it goes the other way as well, that home is encroaching on work. Okay, they say, okay, people email you and you answer emails in at night and the weekends. True, but in the middle of the day, when you're supposed to be working, you're answering emails from your mates, from your parents, you're taking phone calls, you're maybe playing computer games, I don't know, whatever, you know, you're checking up how the soccer scores in the World Cup have been going, you know, checking who won the 7th at, you know, Cranbourne or whatever, you know what I mean? That works both ways. I think we often forget that.
You've done some research that says there's a reduction in conflict between parents when people are working from home more, because I guess it's to do with looking after children or whatever.
It's not conflict between parents we're looking at. It's the conflict between childcare responsibilities, yep, and work. Obviously, it is so much easier if you're working from home to do all the things you need with your children. We mentioned the simple example of just taking them to, you know, the school or to kindergarten and picking them up, because they're all at inconvenient times. I mean, the schools don't fit in with a full-time job, for example. Okay, but they do. That doesn't matter if your workplace is not very far from your school. Okay, which in many people's cases, that's exactly what happens. You often tend to send your kid to the nearest school, unless you're sending them to a rich private school. Okay, so there's one simple example, but could be anything. Okay. I mean, to do with childcare. So yes, the one advantage of this is it could encourage more women into the labour force who are in these sort of white-collar jobs, who've got a potential to get those sort of jobs. And we know that female participation, while these are at record highs, there's still a gap. They're still working less than the men, okay, and there's still potential to go higher. International comparisons say we could still do better on that front. And we need more participation of workers in Australia if we're going to pay off the debt, etc., and so forth. We need to grow. I mean, we're going to grow our way out of it, and there's only three ways. It's productivity. Mm. Well, that's potentially problematic. Mm. There's participation, and then there's population. Mm. Okay, and they're doing the population thing, and the other one of the others is participation. So working from home could encourage more women into the workforce, okay, but can have bad effects too for the women. They may not know it yet. Okay, you earlier mentioned about the advantage of being under the nose of the boss and all those advantages you get, okay, by being present for, you know, if an employer doesn't really know you, he's got a bunch of workers who's working for him, he's going to know the people he sees, okay? Now, yes, if he's making constant Zoom calls and meetings, sure, he may know you, but that's not what happens, right? The whole point of working from home is you get less of that. You get less of that personal interaction, okay? Now, if you have workplaces where some come to work more than others, which I think is going to be the norm, okay? I don't think we're going to force these people who don't want to work from home to work from home. Then they are going to benefit from things like promotions, from being allocated the tasks that have more training in them, that have more career development potential. And the ones who work from home, they could get left out. And therefore, they'll miss out on the promotions. And hey, presto, you know that gender wage gap that politicians like complaining about all the time? We'll just get bigger. Because the biggest source of the gender wage gap isn't, you know, childcare workers getting paid less than motor mechanics. It's because women get promoted at a slower rate than men. And that could get worse. I'm just conjecturing, speculating.
And it could get worse because they could be working at home more because they want to be and are able to.
Yep.
but they're not under the nose of the boss.
They're not under the nose of the boss. Exactly. And of course, and doubly so if their productivity declines, even worse, if that's detectable.
If their okay, if their productivity declines, but their happiness may increase.
Their happiness, which, according to my data, definitely would increase. At least in the short run, the job satisfaction is going to be happier. They might, of course, become less happy down the path if they start getting, hey, why am I miss? Why are all these men getting promoted and I'm not? And it turns out the men are the ones in the are going to work every day.
So there may be a natural human inclination, because we're all got egos, we're all social animals. There is an impetus for us to want to be together, isn't there?
Yeah, some. I think there is. We are social beings, and one of the downsides of working from home, feelings of loneliness and social isolation. So people who are struck by that, but so it depends. If the family is your life, and you've got a lot of, and you've got a big family, I suspect they're not too worried about interactions with their good colleagues at work. On the other hand, if you don't have that, and work is very important to you, those social interactions at work can be very, very important. Okay, bring a lot of meaning to your life. So again, people, I think, are going to, if employees have the choice, they're going to select into what suits them best. But they may select on short-run considerations. There may be longer-term considerations that they're not really thinking of. And I think the big one here is, will they miss out on promotion prospects? And just simply because the boss is going to choose the worker who he thinks is most productive, and even if they aren't more productive, he's going to choose the one he knows. Okay, who does he know most? Who impresses him most? Okay, and the point is, you often have to be under the nose. It's just the way people are. People, yeah, you know, that's just how people operate. I can speak to some psychologists about that. But it's what we call proximity bias. Okay, yeah, people who are near you, it can do dangers if you're an idiot and you don't get on well. That's very bad. But for most people who stay in a workplace, stay together. You know, they're getting on. There's a reason they're together. They're getting on, okay, and they'll be favoured. They'll get all the good jobs.
A word has just crept into my mind that hasn't crept into my mind when I was researching this area, which is depression. Mm-hmm. People working from home, if they see that other people are being promoted above them, if they're in a single-person household and they're on their own, if they have a predisposition to melancholy or depression, surely this situation is going to have a bad effect on their mental health.
Well, I haven't really looked at that yet, but we can have the potential to do that. But you're really talking about further down the train anyway, not really short-term effects. So we don't know at this point the answer to that. I think most research in the past will tell you it's good for their mental health, okay? But that's in a world where not very many people work from home. Okay, and a lot of them were self-employed types. Mm. Okay, so in a world where a lot more people are, where we don't know, but again, I think the answer, it'll come down to whether it's forced upon you or not. So if employees are choosing, not everyone is work the centre of their life, right? For those, we used to say, you know, are you living to work or you're working for a living? So the point is, for some people, it's going to be great. Because you don't have those stresses, you don't have the boss in your ear all the time. You may not like your boss, okay? So the further distance you can create, the better. And yet, not everyone is career-driven. Not everyone is aspiring to be the next CEO, okay? So, and that's responsibilities, etc. So not everyone's the same. We're all different, okay? But yeah, if you're forced to work from home and it's not really your thing, and you're missing out on all that social interactions. Yeah, social isolating, loneliness, that can be depressing. Okay.
Let's turn to the great resignation. I'm not so sure that this isn't more in Australia a media myth than it is a reality. The statistics, prior to COVID, the job quit rate was 9.4%. During COVID, it fell to 7.9%, pretty obviously because people couldn't quit. Simply, the year to February 2022, it rose 11.2%, which could really be explained as just a catch-up from COVID. The statistics don't bear out in Australia that there is any great resignation. And I don't quite understand that, given the tightness of the labour market and that industries are prepared to offer increases in remuneration to people,
why aren't employees resigning more to take advantage of more money to increase their standard of living?
Yeah, well, we don't really know the answer to that question, and it's been pondering the Treasury for quite some time. So let's forget the pandemic for a moment, just think pre-pandemic. That quit rate fell pretty much constantly from 1990, late 80s, until today. It didn't matter what the economic cycle was doing. It just slowly fell. Now, it has picked up in the last year, okay? And it's that year you mentioned, end of 22, and it's probably picked up a bit more since because the labour market's so tight. So normally we would expect, normally, that when labour market's tight, quitting rises, and it is. It's just it's a long, long way short of any historical peak, okay? And the other thing we've got to remember is in America, which is where the term Great Resignation come from, in the Americans are talking about people not just quitting their job and getting another one, that's about quitting their job and forgetting work entirely, okay, a reduction in labour force participation, which did happen in America. But in Australia, like many other countries, in Europe, for example, labour force participation rates are at the highest ever. So nothing like a Great Resignation. So to come back to your question, though, why is it that it appears that despite this very, very tight labour market, not more people are quitting? Well, the first thing is quite a lot of people do leave their jobs in a year. Even though it's not at record levels, it's still, 1.3 million changed a job in that year. So it's still a lot of people who do change. Okay, so we don't really know the answer. Is it barriers to relocation? So if you move a house, stamp duties and things like that can be quite expensive. Moving house is quite expensive. Maybe it's more expensive in Australia than other places. That said, though, that doesn't really stop you from changing a job when you don't have to move. I mean, most people don't move very far, okay? So their jobs are still in the same area. Is it that employers' jobs are so much better than they were in the past? Okay, so I think we forget about job quality isn't just your wage, okay? So if you go long way back, actually, don't have to go that far back, but my first air-conditioned office was when I moved to Melbourne in 20. Well, no, we didn't even have an air-conditioned office then. But I worked for 20 years at a university, never had an air-conditioned office ever. Okay, and I lived in Adelaide. Okay, hot. All right. So, but that just wasn't a thing. Nowadays, you don't have an air conditioner. Poor people living in, like they complain. Their landlords they're vicious, nasty people because there's not an air conditioner there. Okay, so the world's changed, and jobs have got so much safer. Okay, yes, you still hear these horrible stories, people dying on construction sites, but they're very rare, okay, compared with the past. So all jobs have got better. I think human resource management practices have got better. Managers, I think, understand the importance of treating their workers well. That doesn't mean they're not nasty employers. Of course there are, okay? But I think jobs have got better. I'm just conjecturing, right? Because we don't really have, again, a really good, solid explanation of why people are not voting with their feet to extract higher wage increases. Not more of them. I mean, people are doing it.
Do you think that of older people that may have considered leaving the workforce and retiring have put that off because their investments may have declined because of recent rumblings in the share market?
I think older workers do make those sorts of decisions. They make those calculations, particularly with accumulation type schemes. They will make those sorts of calculations for themselves. I don't know. I mean, I think when you make the decision to retire, it at the time you do it, it seems sort of permanent. All right? And then we're living so much longer. You're thinking, what the hell am I going to do for the next 25 years? Whereas, if you go back a generation, you retired and within a few years you're dead. Okay? But that's not the case now. So a lot of these people, particularly if their job was fairly important to them, and their life revolved around their job, that's a big decision that they have to take. And so I think a lot of them are somewhat averse. They have to think about it a lot. Even though the reality is, of course, you can get back in labour force really easily. But the question is, can you get back into the high status job you once had, perhaps? Maybe not. Okay. So it's a big decision. You don't take it lightly.
Do you think that there's been any change in attitude to re-employment of older workers?
No. I mean, that. I think that's about getting people back in, about giving them incentives for like part-time jobs, isn't it? Well, are you talking about the government incentives that's increased the threshold on you can get an age pension and a bit extra cash?
No, I'm talking about, generally people thinking, oh, there's an older person post-retirement, or a person over 55 years of age, whatever the definition of older is now, I'm not quite sure. It seems to change every week. But there's been inclinations to employ younger people, maybe because they believe their energy levels are high, maybe they believe that, well, they're cheaper.
That's the way it's always been.
Yes.
Is it changing? If it is, slowly, those perceptions, I think, still predominate. And that's another reason why, so when you're older and you've got a job, you've been in it for a long time, you're sort of in a position of authority and you can hold on to that job for quite a long time. But once you lose it, give up on that job, getting another one is much harder. So if older people, for example, get made redundant later in life, they find it very, very tough. Okay. So generally speaking, younger people find it hard to get in, you know, are much more likely to be able to get into the labour market, okay, but they're much more likely to be out of it, you know, so that's the issue. And so I think there is a bias where we think, oh, we've got to help the young people have got it tough, and that's sort of not unreasonable, though not now. I mean, at the current moment, really anybody should be able to get a job, okay, and probably a job that suits them, okay, or at least appears suitable given their qualifications. Okay, there'll only be a relatively small number who are very specialist fields where that won't be the case. Okay, so the people who are unemployed, you know, they've obviously got some issues that make them very difficult to unemployment, or they've got very, very specific tastes. Okay, so everyone can get a job now. But as I said, but there definitely is. Well, I say definitely, but I think there are a fair amount of anecdote that older workers still face this discrimination. And because old people, old dogs don't learn new tricks, all this sort of stuff, okay, which is obviously not quite right, okay, particularly as we're living longer and we're living healthily, we're much more healthy longer, okay. So an older worker, well, you define them as maybe 55, they can give another 20 years in labour force if they want, no problem, okay. Especially now, it's not hard physical labour jobs. Most of the jobs we're talking about now don't involve hard physical labour. They're office jobs or they're service sector jobs. So That's not really the constraint.
You don't see a 3.4% unemployment rate as accelerating an acceptance of the older worker back into.
Definitely older. I mean, definitely any older worker wants to get a job now, they can get one, whether it's the one they want or not. Okay,
yeah.
So if they want to go get a job waiting tables, I think restaurants are taking them. They may have a bias against taking them, but the reality is they need people to wait their tables, and they've got signs in the window, and this person presents. Looks very presentable, can speak. There are obviously some constraints. They like people to be able to converse with the customers, so they want to speak reasonable language. There's a few, they want to be presentable. Many older people are. And that's it. Presentable, English, you're hired. Okay? But if they want to get a job, you know, that they used to have, let's say they were, you know, the accounts manager of something or other, that job may not be there because they're giving it to the younger person. Okay? And then you might say, well, I'm not going to take I'm not going to go down and work at a lower level. So older workers have a bit of degree of self-respect and dignity as well. Okay. But they might like just a completely different change, a different field, something that's not too pressured, not too stressed, you know, that sort of thing. So I don't know. Okay. But the opportunities are there for older workers more at the moment. But once unemployment starts rising again, I bet you they'll be the ones that'll still get left on the rack.
Okay. Now we come to the Bergenomics test, Mark. Are you nervous about this?
Well, I was. I mean, the old hamburger. What does it mean for a hamburger? Working from home?
So, yes, hybrid working from home, all of these massive changes that would seem to fulfil a great continuum of different ideas. What are the effects on our simple hamburger?
Well, if a good outcome is more hamburgers being eaten, I don't know if that's how hamburger sees it, but then probably not so good. Okay, so if working from home sticks, okay, particularly as I'm saying it's favoured by the women, then they're probably going to be more home cooking. I mean, they're going to be getting them more supplies, etc. So probably less reliance, yes, less use of fast food. And so, therefore, less use of that particular type of hamburger. Maybe they'll make hamburgers at home instead, but I think the takeaway hamburger, you know, sales per head should decline.
Good. Oh, that's very specific. I like that.
Is that what you meant?
We can measure that. Thank you for illuminating us. This is a bigger topic than I first thought, because it's not black and white. It isn't so much an employer versus employee situation as most people want to look at it.
No, it isn't. It isn't.
It is just, and it will continue to grow and evolve. And as people change building skyscrapers or moving or whatever, it will just evolve into a workforce that is very different, do you think?
No, my phone's gone off. I'm going to have to.
This is authentic podcasting. So you see the work.
That's my brother calling me up. I thought it might have been a journalist, but
you think we're going to have a much more diversified workforce that will change? The look of the workforce is definitely going to be different.
I think we're going to have a more diverse workforce in terms of working time arrangements and where people work. Yeah. That's, I think, inevitable. Where it's going to settle down to, I don't know, but I think you are the and I think it's inevitable that the CBDs in our big cities are going to suffer.
So we're not going, no matter what. We're not going back to where
we were. There's population growth. Okay, so that's the saviour for them. They'll be very keen on population growth. Okay, so maybe a lot of those empty office buildings will be filled up with people, recently arrived immigrants, and we turned into apartments. I don't know. Okay, we're still going to need a lot of house. We're still going to need a lot of place for people if we continue growing the population. Okay, but I don't think we will quite have as many, workers. Using the lunchtime, the people who are going to miss out, particularly the lunchtime traders, okay, at CBD. Mm. But lunchtime traders in the suburbs, probably booming, okay. Takeaway delivery, meal delivery, presumably booming, though one company not booming enough to stop Deliveroo from leaving the country or quitting. But anyway, on another topic there.
Professor Mark Wooden, thank you.
Russ, my pleasure.
You've done a great job in explaining a very wide topic, and I really look forward to catching up with you again to see where this all ends up. My thanks to today's expert guest, Professor Mark Wooden of the Melbourne Institute. My takeout from today's podcast with Professor Wooden is that the working from home and hybrid working discussion isn't a simple one. COVID accelerated a pre-existing need for more flexible employee working conditions. There isn't going to be a reversal of this situation in the short term because Australia's incredibly tight labour market has given employees the upper hand in negotiation with their employers about where they will work from. There are a lot of factors, many known and many unknown, that will shape the future of hybrid working, including productivity, gender equality, and mental health. But we do know for certain central business districts in their current form have changed forever. We also know when the unemployment level returns to more average levels, employees will lose their bargaining power and many will be forced to return to the workplace for a high proportion of their work week. Hybrid working will be a big industrial relations topic for a long time. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Bergonomics podcast on Apple and Spotify and pass it on to others who you think may enjoy the demystification of economics. Jump onto our Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok feeds with your opinion. Thank you for listening.